Let's have an AA meeting. My name's Tim, and I'm an alcoholic. Welcome to the Monday Night Blue Chip Speakers Meeting on NavaZoom, where a member of Alcoholics Anonymous with 1 year or more of sobriety tells his or her story. This reading is based on a passage from page 29 of the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. Each individual in our personal stories describes in their own language and from their own point of view the way they establish their relationship with God. These give a fair cross-section of our membership and a clear-cut idea of what has happened in their lives. We hope no one will consider these self-revealing accounts in bad taste. Our hope is that many alcoholic men and women in our NABA Zoom room tonight and listening later on aabluechipspeakers.org, desperately in need, will hear tonight's speaker, and we believe it is only by fully disclosing ourselves and our problems that any of us shall be persuaded to say, yes, I'm one of them too. I must have this thing. Tonight, I am very pleased to introduce Jeff A., from the Rebus group in Cobb County. And Jeff reminded me when we were setting this up.
That was one of Speedy Moore's home groups.
Speedy Moore was one of the first guys that I recorded when I first got sober. And his story is on the website. I think it's in 2008, maybe 2009. He was a classic AA. Jeff is cut out of that same mode from what I've heard so far from him. So open your ears and give a listen. Here's Jeff.
Hi, everybody. My name is Jeff. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Jeff.
Yeah. I'm grateful to be here. I'm positive of alcohol, people, places, and things. And I know I can't drink alcohol. You know, our stories just close in a general way what we used to be like, what happened, and what we're like now. I was born in Roswell, Georgia, in downtown Atlanta, where the old Grady Hospital, Hughes Falling, that's the hospital that I was born in. Grew up in Roswell and had four brothers and two sisters. Trying to fit in. Seemed like I've been trying to do that all my life. Trying to fit in. Even in grammar school. Being the tallest one on the back row and all that. I've been a loner all my life. And I used to go out and hunt in the woods, fish, climb trees. I was pretty good at drawing pictures, something I don't do anymore, sketching and all. So me trying to fit in, I believe my mother left me in charge at the age of four to watch my sister. And this time we was playing with the fire in the stove, and we ended up burning down the house, and it was gutted. So me and my sister went and lived in Marietta, and the family separated, and I'm trying to fit in somewhere else. And finally, they rebuilt the house, and this time, the resin in the chimney stack caught the house on fire this time, and it burned down again. So we moved. Live with relatives in Alpharetta. And to this day, you couldn't sell me no crock. You couldn't give me a crock pot. I wouldn't use it. My OCD checking stuff, make sure it's off, checking doors and all that stuff. It carried on into my adulthood. But I always believed that growing up I was in God's favor. And I still do, because God had his hand on me when I was out there as a kid, as growing up. until this day. I know, I hope people will get some out of this except for me. I know I had to do it because it's going to help me if it don't help anybody else. And hopefully it will help somebody. I just knew that when I was growing up trying to fit in and in high school, same old thing, trying to fit in. Right now I'm 6'6". I really didn't play any basketball in high school, but I did a little bit when I graduated in college. I got, like I said, I like to draw. Some I don't do now, but, and I was good at it. So I took up mechanical drafting in high school and did pretty good. So when I ended up moving from, my mother bought a house over here in Marietta, and I finished my last year in Roswell. I went to the Chattahoochee Tech, took up, got some courses, and I was pretty good at it and got, you know, doing mechanical drafting, doing it on the board, and I ended up getting a job in the engineering. I was pretty good at freehand lettering, pencil and inking. People used to brag on my penmanship. I was pretty good at it, and I was a lot of on-the-job training. I learned as I went. And when technology came along and what I was doing on the board, I had to learn how to do it on the computer. So instead of using an eraser, I had to learn how to hit the delete button. So and I was pretty good at that. And growing up, I was in the highway traffic and doing HOV lane stuff and intersections and water and sewer. And even did some field work, smoke testing for the city of Atlanta, separating the storm and the sewer system. Because when it rains, that's a no-no. So you put a smoke bomb on top of the manhole and see who's on that line, and you have come up with a plan. So, and did some water sampling out in the field and some surveying. Other companies I worked for, I did measurements downtown Atlanta on the bridges. They took measurements and measured the bridges downtown Atlanta at night. It's dangerous. It was dangerous work, but it was exciting. And you shut down three lanes of traffic using a laser beam to measure the distance doing bridge inspection. As I go on the bridges today, I find myself inspecting them as I'm traveling. So when I graduated, I took my first train. And I couldn't wait to do it all the next day. And I drank alcoholic from the beginning. So for me, from that point on, it was downhill. I started drinking at 18, came in the program at 35. 18 going on 35. Now 67. You know, they say you stop growing mentally, physically, and spiritually when you start drinking. And, you know, for me, I just knew that I had a problem and I really didn't know what to do about it, but I kept doing what I was doing. And, you know, everything was fine until I started getting DUIs. I would get them on even years. 84, 86, 88. And, you know, first one was 0.24. The next one, 0.26. Then the other one, 0.28. And this alcoholic thinking, you say, well, hell, Jeff, you just don't drive on even years, you'll be okay. So that didn't work out. And you get where you start isolating. And at the time, my better half, she claimed I ran her and the baby off, but you know, that's a story. But I always felt I was in God's favor, and when some nights late at night the police would come pull a mix up to me on 41, I look at him, he look at me, and he goes on. This happened several times, and having stuff on the floorboard and on the seat, and I'm on 41, thing I'm in the chicken lane, and I'm on common traffic lane, and God help me get the car back over, and then when I hear this bumpity bump, I come to, and I'm going off the shoulder. Somebody help me get the car back in between the lines. And I would tell myself, Jeff, you'll do better the next time. So that went on and on. So if you keep on doing what you always done, you're going to keep on getting what you always got. So if I ain't changing, the term worser is not in the dictionary, but they should put it in there because I got worser. Because I wasn't making no effort to change my ways. But like I said, God, I always felt like I was in God's favor, and he has me. So I continue to drink and doing stuff that I shouldn't have been doing. I could on the weekend tie one on and then go in the office on Monday. This is when I was freehand lettering. And my hand had that shape to it. And I could tell you exactly when I did that lettering, because it was different from my regular freehand lettering. So I just continued doing what I was doing. It got times where God was putting angels in my life. Still do. In the beginning, it was police, because police came along and they saved me from myself by, locking me up. I ended up with 3 DUIs, and all the thousands and thousands of times I drove home under influence, I should have been in double digits at least. Thank God and for watching over me. Another example, when we was at a company picnic, and the kids was going on the Lake Lanier Island. Kids were going back and forth to this little island from the main shore. So we was drinking beer and playing softball, I got that brilliant idea that, oh, if they can do it, I can do it. So I took my butt out there and got about halfway in the channel, and that water started hitting me upside my head. That 3 times stuff, I went down a lot of times. I drank so much water, damn lake should have been drained. So Bill Willard and my supervisor were with me, and they was in front of me. And I told them I needed help, so my supervisor came back there, and he started trying to get me under control, and I was fighting and wrestling with him. So he just pushed me away. And that moment, I seen my life flash, and I seen people talking about, yeah, you heard about Jeff drowning up at Lake Lanier Island? Then Bill Willard, like I said, God put angels in my life, and this person was Bill Willard, and he had been working for came to work there, and he got me. I came back there and got me under control, and went to the other side, the aisle, and came back on the tube. And shortly after that, Bill, he quit. He went on. And it's amazing how things happen. And I don't look at it as being lucky. In 96, you know, I just got tired of being sick and tired. Actually, it was before 96. I got tired of being sick and tired, and I thought about committing suicide. And, you know, us alcoholics is very sensitive and thin-skinned. So I told my better half at the time, I'm thinking about committing suicide. And she laughed at me. Can you imagine that, Tim? So, and I said, okay, I'll show you. And I'm glad I didn't show it to him, because we wouldn't be having this conversation. I just thank God I got sick and tired of being sick and tired. I was working two jobs, had two part-time jobs and a full-time job. It seemed like I stayed broke all the time. I paid my bills, but other than that, I know I can't nobody relate to this, but, you know, doing other things and crawling on the floor, picking up lint and stuff, trying to find some, and I became my best customer, and things just were going downhill. That saying, if you don't ask, you don't get. I went to my boss man, Bob Williams. I said, Bob, I can't make it on what y'all paying me. I need a raise. I had lost 15 pounds, rank of clothes, pants and all, shirt, and I'll be darned. They gave me a raise. And like I said, God always had his hand on me and when I was out there screwing up. So I'm just glad that I was able to make it in the program in January the 28th of 88. The clubhouse Tim was referring to with Rebos is sober spelled backwards. That's how they came up with that name. I was court ordered to go. They had bets on me saying, well, he ain't gonna make it. And all I know, things that I heard, you know, that term Speedy Moore used to say, the three S's, sick, sad, and sorry ass. And I can relate to that. So you that way, so what you damn gonna do about it? You know, it's a process, and it just takes time. He talked about that alcoholism is a line where alcoholism is. And there's another line beyond that first line that a lot of people experience, and I experienced it myself, when you're crawling from room to room. It ain't a good feeling. And, you know, yeah, I'm out there, and I know I had an experience. I experienced several times, but I knew I was in trouble. A lot of alcoholics, they end up brain dead and dying because they don't come back from this. And I just count my blessings. I just continue to listen and do a lot of listening still today after I came in the program. And like How It Works was read the first paragraph, honesty is missing three times. So that's telling me that's very important. So if I've been being dishonest, I got to start being honest. And the more I got honest with myself, the more honest I could be with other people. That saying, to thy own self be true. So for me, it takes time. Just like Jocko used to say, you can come in the program at the same time, but everybody's in their own little time machine. It's 10 miles in the effing woods and 10 miles out of the effing woods. That's if you don't get lost. So it's a process. It just takes time. So for me, I'm just glad that I stuck around long enough to drop, to get sober, and stay sober. It's a process. Newcomers don't like to hear that, but just the way I was taught, it's just You don't happen in no 30 days. I know that. Not for me. The people that I hung out in the clubhouse that was there at my first meeting, that I came early and they sent me down and they gave me literature and gave me phone numbers. And when I came in that door, I looked around. I said, wow, I've been looking for this all my life. And I was at home. And I wasn't going to let nobody, you know, run me out of there. Because if you let somebody run you out of there, if you survive, that damn alcohol will run your ass back up in there. So for me, I was in the right place. They had the amen table. They had like the suburban table. They had the biker's table. And then they had, eventually they had a non-smoking table. And then they, across the back, they had a half measure table. That's where the people, you know, half measuring. And if you're sitting there, that's what you was doing. So anyway, and it's amazing how that smoke will come up to that last table over there and just stop. But anyway, I was smoking when I first came in the program, and 9 months later, they was having the Great American Smokeout in November the 16th. And I just quit cold turkey, used the steps. So it's amazing how you can use these steps for other things. The bottom line is I want to go back to the people that was there when I first came in, that like E.T. would talk about it takes time. Paul Serhos would talk about kids keep it simple, stupid. And I learned over the years, you just have to dumb it down. You can be too smart for this program. And I just know that I thought I had all answers, you know, before I came in the program. And it don't matter now. I don't care if I don't have all answers. Ain't no big deal. And Speedy Moore will talk about the program. It is what it is. It ain't going to change. You got to accept it or not. The program is fixed. You got to do the changing. So for me, I had to do a lot of changing, you know. And one of the things early on, Thomas Hughes tricked me, Tim, getting up there reading the promises about 15 days in the program. And the more I gripped that podium, the more it vibrated. And I got through reading the promises, and I was having an anxiety attack, and my stomach was all upset. And I sat down, I got up and went in the bathroom, and I threw up. I said, okay, I know what I do. I just come late, and I leave early, and then I won't have to deal with this stuff. But that short period of time, people sharing their experience, strength, and hope, it gave me hope that the only way I can get it, you know, that fear factor ease off of me or get rid of it, I have to do a lot of the things I'm uncomfortable in doing. So I did them. And Jimmy Egan used to say, if you pray about something and then after praying about it, you don't have no faith because you worrying about it. Just turn it over to God and just let it be. And Gail used to talk about the God box. And she would write stuff in on a piece of paper and put it in her box. And I can relate to that. But still, I wanted to be different. They had, back then, they served Maxwell House coffee in cans. So I got me a blue can. And I wrote on paper. I looked at that the other day. God put someone compatible in my life and helped me get a house. And, wow, it happened. So anyway, play on words, God can. So, and Reverend Bob talked about living amends. I would, sometimes people pass on, you don't get around, move away, and you owe somebody amends. And you have to live that amends, take action to change. Louise Smith and Earl used to, they were very religious, and Louise would go to church a lot. And she would say, I go to church to save my soul. I come to AA to save my ass. And I can relate to that. And Lynn Blake would talk about practicing these principles in all your affairs. If you can't practice all these principles in all your affairs, you probably got too many affairs. So just keeping it simple. Jocko, Rusty Jones talking about my track record, trusting the process. Over the years, I jotted down a lot of stuff that happened to me in the program, and it's amazing. All these people's names, not just the first name and the last name that I learned, I still give them credit. After almost 33 years, I still give them their props, their credit, because I heard it from them, and it ain't like I made it. Like Speedy Morris used to say, he used to try out different new material at a new meeting and see how it go over, and then he'd bring it back to the clubhouse. But anyway, I just give them their props because they was there for me. A lot of them, I didn't say you my sponsor, but I used them as sponsor. Like Gail and Louise, it's like dealing with a female in relationship or whatever. I would talk to them instead of talking to another a hard leg and trying to get them to agree with me just to keep it real. So I just know that I need the people in AA. And, you know, when I came on Zoom, I was going to this meeting that I consider it was a beginner's meeting because it wasn't a lot of sobriety, long-term sobriety in there. And I'm not against helping a newcomer, but I said I came to the social distance meeting, and it was people that had a lot of sobriety, and I could relate to them, and they started sharing. I said, the light came on. I said, man, wow. This is what I've been missing for several months, you know, sobriety, recovery. It's all right to talk about the problem, but it's not all right to keep on talking about the problem over and over and, you know, talk about the solution and talk about recovery. All I know, it takes time, you know. For me, it takes time, and time will take care of the rest. Thank God for newcomers because to keep it fresh in my mind. When I was early on in the program, they would say, take the cotton out of your ears and put it in your mouth. And that's what I did. And they told me the only thing going to keep stand between me and that drink is a higher power, God, and I always believed in God to a certain extent. I'm a spiritual person, but I'm not a religion person. I asked God to remove that desire and that compulsion to want to drink. Drinking was removed for me, that compulsion and the wanting to drink early on in the program, way before I started understanding the big book. And then I realized I would have sold myself short if I had just came in there and not drinking, because AA will not teach me how to not drink alcohol, but it will teach me how to live life on life term without alcohol, and it's a big difference. So for me, besides alcohol just a symptom, I got to learn how to get along with other people in life, so, you know, I can survive. I can stay sober because, it, you know, Jeff was the way Jeff was way before he picked up that drink. And so I got to work on my character defects and shortcomings to continue to change and grow in the program. And so for me, it takes time. And, you know, I've met a lot of people summer is sicker than others. And you think you got it bad, but then other people share and meet, and you say, well, darn, Jeff, you thought you had it bad, but you don't know what bad is. Well, at the time, it was bad enough for me. That's all I can say, you know. So I just count my blessings because, like I said, it could have been a lot worse, sir. I needed this program if I wasn't an alcoholic, but it took being an alcoholic to get this program. It's crazy, but that's how it is. And I got a gift today. I don't take it lightly because, you know, only I can screw this thing up. Me personally, this is just how I feel about AA today. You know, I'm under the thing. If someone go out, and the way I was taught, you go out not because you had to, you go out because he wanted to. And they told me, no matter what the hell I'm going through, happy, sad, or glad, job or no job, license, car, relationship, family or no family, coronavirus or no coronavirus, you damn just don't drink. And it was true then, and it's true today. So for me, I just got to my own self be true. I lost two brothers and a sister since I been in the program. It's just life goes on. I got when I was working in the office, among my personal pictures, my daughter and all, I had Speedy Moore, Railroad Bob, and Lynn Blake in the mix of, and they would say, "Who are these?" I said, "Oh, this is my extended family, man. The people that signed my sheet from Cobb County that I had to get signed in the beginning. I signed so many, they told me I just need to stop. I'd continue going to meetings, but you don't have to sign no more, turn in no more papers." And I still got a bunch of them today. And it's just like, I cherish these signatures more than if I got it from somebody in entertainment, whatever. I look at them, I can put a face to it, and I know these people, and I made that connection. I'm just glad that I made it in the program. I'm going to read this to him, and this says, "Good morning, this is God. I will be handling all of your problems today, and I won't be needing your help. So have a blessed day, Jeff. Inspire yourself." And I've been in the AA for long enough to, and knowing that to be an expert, and I consider myself an expert because I've been in here long enough. You can look at my track record, and my definition of an expert is someone who knows more and more about less and less until he knows absolutely everything about nothing. So I just have to continue to do what I've been doing, and the most important chip I picked up is the white chip, the only chip I carry with me. It has 240 tick marks on both sides, rough on the outside, smooth in the middle. You don't have to take my word how many tick marks are under, but count them. It might keep you sober. I'm grateful to be here, Tim. Grateful to be anywhere. I hope each and every one of y'all have a blessed day tomorrow in spite of yourselves. Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. That was pure AA, man. Speedy Moore, when he told a story for me, he said, "Tonight I'm marvelous, and if you're not marvelous, it's your own damn fault." And then he proceeded to tell how he got sober. That was a good one, Jeff. Thank you so much, buddy. That's pure AA.
Thanks so much, Jeff.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff. I knew it was going to be good the first time I heard you, first time I met you. Yeah, so I'm so glad that I tuned in tonight. Yeah, you did a great job. I loved hearing your story.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeff, for sharing your story. I could really relate to a lot of it, and it was good to hear it from you.
Thank you.
Awesome. Good job, Jeff. You kept it simple and honest and powerful. Thank you so very much. I really, I'm happy to know you.
Thank you.
I thought your experience, strength, and hope, Jeff, was very enlightening. I'm going to go back and listen to your talk again because I really appreciated how you remembered all the people who helped you. Not only the people, but you remembered what they said to you. And I thought that was just awesome, awesome to have in your recovery. And I want
to
remember the things that you said.
You know, like you said, enlightened. You know, people come in the program and say they had blackouts, and I would say I had whiteouts.
I'm gone away. I ain't never going back. Only thing I own in a paper sack. I'm all alone, and I'm lonesome day and night. I need someone's hand carry me when I'm tired. Got to go. I can't stay here no more. That mean old bartender just showed me the door. Somewhere, somehow, I'll win my fight someday, and we'll all be together on that broad highway. On that broad highway.